This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to step up to the plate with Jim, Steve, Fish, and former two-time Gold Glover World Series champion, Benji Molina.
A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
Ranger, that is! In the left field, December 3000, a run is scored!
Smith courts one into right down the line. It may go! Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
A high pop ball! The Clover's there! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant!
Breeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Swing and a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006.
In the air to left, well hit. Back is Craig. What a team. What a ride. The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
Hello, Cardinal Nation, and welcome to this Tuesday morning edition of Two Birds on a Bat, your St. Louis Cardinals fan podcast. Sorry we're a day late here, but due to the holiday, we were closed yesterday. So coming to you live from the lineupmedia.fm studios and working some Cardinal baseball with my good friend Steve-O next to me here. What's up, bud?
How was your holiday, man? I mean, I know you had busy. You had the graduation party.
Yeah.
Congrats on that. I see he's not here at work today.
Well, hang on. We went regional championship, which they won.
Absolutely.
Good for them. Great game against, they beat the number one seed. So regional championship, straight to graduation, right after regional championship, the boys change, head over to, then obviously had the nice graduation dinner. Okay. A month.
Where'd you go?
Ed Chop House.
Okay. I thought you were an Andreas guy.
But this was his deal.
All right.
So, and then had been planning for quite some time. My wife did a wonderful job planning the graduation party in conjunction with some of our best friends. We did a double thing.
Great party, by the way.
Great party, right? Good
food,
right? There you go. So that was all day Sunday.
Yep.
Till the, 1:30 in the morning type thing. Get up, clean up yesterday, right?
I got you.
So that was the weekend. Now, let me say this.
So how much Cardinal baseball did you get in? Because
just enough to know that I'm fed up.
Okay.
Okay, but here's what I'm going to say. And here's the deal, folks, just so you know. You're going to get brought home by Steve-O today as I have to leave, and him and Benji will take the reins. But forgive me if he screws this up, okay? But I'm leaving him directions that a monkey could follow, but we'll see what happens.
Except for things to talk about.
What is there? I mean, and again, that's what you said to me. You're like, man, you hit me with this. I don't have my computer with me. I said, what?
I have nothing in front of me.
Okay, so here's what I said.
Yeah.
What do you need? What we have here is a collection of baseball players that aren't very good. So here's what I am going to say. I'm going to give my little rant here. Before I do that, I want to remind everybody, make sure they check us out at twobirdsonabat.com. It's where you'll find the podcast. It's also where you can subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Twitter if you want to stay engaged with us. We are at Birds on a Bat Show. If you're a Cardinal fan, we're going to follow you back, we promise. Hit us up on Facebook, Two Birds on a Bat. Type it in the search bar. You'll find us, like our page. We did start the new Facebook group, Birds on a Bat. If you want to join that, just ask. We'll be happy to accept you. Just in an effort to share some of that stuff around. Don't forget our friends that have helped grow the show. Of course, Nate McHenry with RallySquirrel.com. The great Facebook page. Of course, Chris Lawless over at Cardinal Nation and Cardinal 24/7. And the Cardinal Freak as well. And thanks again to lineupmedia.fm, the fastest growing podcast company on the planet. And, of course, our sponsor, Supreme Lending, with Steve-O and his wonderful wife, Emily. And we'll hear from them in just a minute. But before we do, and before I go, I'm going to say this. Okay, I'm going to say this. Nobody, and I mean nobody, not Benji Molina, not Mike Matheny, not John Mozeliak, not Bill DeWitt, not Mike Shannon, not anybody, okay, and I'm covering the whole gamut here because of the hot topics going on right now. Nobody's going to convince me that this is a well-assembled team. Nobody. Okay? Nobody. These players are average at best, and that's what we are as an average baseball team, okay? And I loved this smart-ass comment I saw here, too. Isn't it nice to hear Mike Shannon call him out? I guess us people that aren't fans because we called them out. Now, I know that may have been something at us, but I see other people saying you're not allowed to criticize the Cardinals, which is bullshit. You absolutely can criticize the Cardinals. For our purposes, what I want to make clear is this. When I've heard Benji say, listen, you're not a real – what we're talking about here is watch where you place the blame. That's what we're saying. Quit looking to play the blame game. Okay, stop blaming John Mabry because Randall Grichuk can't hit. Okay, I've said this once on the show, and I'm going to say it again. Randall Grichuk is a cautionary tale. He was drafted that high and was traded for basically nothing, which tells you right away, they don't trade guys that are superstars for nobody. Drafted in the first round ahead of Mike Trout. Okay, there you go. There's a reason why he was traded. Do you think maybe their guys watched this bullshit that's going on and said, man, I don't think so. Let's see what we can get for him. Okay, so there's that. Okay? Nobody has said they played well. We've all said they haven't played well. The problem is everybody wants to blame somebody for it. You want to blame somebody? Blame the person that decided, that said, these guys can all do these things that are involved in the game of baseball. Because they can't. And you know why we know they can't? Because they're not doing it. Okay? I've said this about Cardinal management. If they went out and signed a reliever, and he was a good reliever, and he came here and stunk it up, I wouldn't blame the Cardinals. The problem is they went out and gave $9 million a year to a left-hander who wasn't very good to begin with. Show me where Brett Cecil was ever dominant. Okay? Never. They didn't go out and sign Aroldis Chapman and he come in here and stunk. If that happened, I'd say, man, you can't fault the Cardinals for that one. Okay? They didn't get David Price and he came in here and was awful. And you could say, well, how do you, you know, the guy gets 18 wins a year and strikes out 204 people. I mean, how could you blame? I couldn't blame the Cardinals. What they did was, and I don't know why everybody lets Mozeliak and DeWitt off the hook here. Okay, what they did was they gave your manager a bunch of maybe guys with potential.
Well, Steven
Piscotty, boy, he looks like he's going to be this. And Randall Grichuk looks like he's going to be this. And Colton Wong looks like, and Aledmys Diaz looks like he's going to be this. And Jed Jerkle's kind of been a utility guy. Although he's been, I got no issues with Jed Jerkle. That's not my point. But okay. My point is, and Matt Carpenter, yeah, he looks like he can hit. He's had a couple good runs. Man, he seems like a productive guy. Can't find a position for him. Okay. So you tell me who's at fault. People act like the manager got these all-star players and ruined them, or John Mabry got these great hitters and ruined them. You don't even know what a hitting coach does. And here's my other thing, too. Mike Shannon's so great. And I love Mike, by the way. I know Mike. So Mike's great because Mike called him out. Okay? Guess what? Mike's not the manager. If you don't know this, then yes, maybe you shouldn't be a fan because you don't understand. It is exactly your manager's job to stand at a podium when Randall Grichuk isn't very good and say, I still believe he can be an MVP-type player. It is exactly your manager's job. That is exactly what he's supposed to do. And if for all of you that think you could do it and you say, I'll do a better job, go up there and do what it is you want to do and see how long you last in that room. You'll last about 5 minutes before these guys that make all this money and are the best players in the world run you out of there. You'll be gone. The minute you try that bullshit you're tweeting out, I'm going to hold somebody accountable. Hey, listen, here's another thing. If you think they're not being held accountable behind closed doors, you're crazy. Quit blaming people. The fact that it keeps happening over and over again has nothing to do with accountability. It has to do with if it walks like a duck and it quack like a duck. What is it, Steve?
Lollygaggers. Oh, it's a duck.
It's a duck. And ain't no George Kissel, ain't no Jose Oquendo going to make them any better. And you can fire Mike today and bring in Earl Weaver. You could bring in Connie Mack. You could bring in back Tony La Russa. Let me tell you what Tony La Russa is going to do if he comes back. He's going to say he's going to bench them all. That's why he's not coming back, because that's not what's going on down on Clark Street these days. That's not what's going on. Listen, if you don't think for one reason that one of the reasons Tony La Russa left was because he saw some writing on the wall with especially Albert. You people are nuts. He didn't retire off into the sunset. He retired, went and worked somewhere else. Why do you think a Hall of Fame manager would do that? If you want to use your brain and you want to call out all these conspiracy theories, why don't you start with that one? Why did the Hall of Fame manager leave after a World Series?
It's crazy.
The deteriorating roster is the problem, folks. Quit blaming the manager. Quit blaming the hitting coach. Quit blaming the pitching coach. If you're the manager tomorrow and I give you a bunch of guys that can play, you're going to look pretty good. If I give you a bunch of guys that are average at best with potential, you have a real good chance of looking awful. Now, I can tell you this. When I leave here, okay, I'm sure you and Benji will cover this. And I can't wait to hear your guys' opinion on it. But I obviously do have to go. So leaving, we're going to take a short break. We're going to hear from our sponsor, Supreme Lending. And when we come back on the other side, you're going to hear from Steve-O and Benji. And I cannot wait to hear their thoughts on this because I have to believe you're going to cover some of it. But I'm going to tell you, folks, what you have here, okay, is a bumpy ride, like we said from the beginning, and an average baseball team when it comes to talent. Now, we've all seen average baseball teams overachieve, okay? Maybe they overachieved for a few games when they won the. Maybe they did. I'm a fan. Of course I get excited about that. But sooner or later, something becomes what? A pattern. A pattern is who you are.
What did Denny Green say?
They are who we thought they were.
And on that note,
let's take a break here from our friends at Supreme Lending. We'll see you on the other side.
Hey, Cardinals fans. This is Steve and Emily Flowers with Supreme Lending. When we're not watching our Redbirds chase another world championship, we're helping buyers finance their dream home.
That's right. Whether you're a first-time home buyer looking for down payment assistance or an experienced buyer looking for your next move, you deserve the best. So call us now at 618-655-0483. We have all the bases covered when it comes to your next home loan. FHA, USDA, VA, and conventional. We do it all here at Supreme Lending.
Homeowners, with our refinance programs, you could lower your rate, get cash out to consolidate debt, or even remodel that bathroom, kitchen, or the outdoor space you've been dreaming of.
The bases are loaded in your favor here at Supreme Lending. Call us at 618-655-0483 or visit us online at steveflowers.supremelending.com or search us on Facebook at Steve and Emily Flowers-Supreme Lending.
Go Birds!
All programs and terms are subject to change without notice and subject to underwriting approval. Supreme Lending, NMLS 2129, is not affiliated with a government agency. Steve Flowers, NMLS 227652. Emily Flowers, NMLS 1256327. Missouri Company Registration 17-2156. Branch NMLS ID 1453720. Located at 361 1 Richardson Square Drive, Suite 200. Equal housing lender.
All right, welcome back, folks. As you heard, the guy who loves a time of possession talk, Jim, had to take off and had more important things to do after his 10-minute-long rant there. So we're going to turn it over to me and our good friend, Benji Molina, coming to you on the M4 by Yachty hotline. BMO, what's going on, brother?
Hey, man, you sound so good, too, man. What's going on?
Well, you know, he gave me the keys to the castle here. You know, I'm driving the new car now, and it's all good. So we're gonna try to do the rest of the show here. I think we got a lot to talk about, and we're going to take it from there. But first and foremost, you're in town. I should have come over and picked you up and had you in studio. Would have been a little bit better.
That would have been great, man. I wasn't thinking about it too much because a lot of things happened yesterday. And, you know, I'm doing the Spanish radio, and then my mom, we came in really late. We landed at 12 a.m. the night before, and then we got to the hotel at 2:15. So it was a weird day. That's why we haven't been in touch so much. But no, man, a lot of things have happened, huh?
Yeah. You got all four games this week against the Dodgers, right?
Yeah.
How's that going? Just fill everybody in. It's a Spanish radio broadcast, so you're here, and this is this the last four games that you guys are contracted through?
Yes. This is the last four. We couldn't pick a better team because obviously LA is a big Hispanic area too. It could help us, but this is our last four. They're gonna have to do something about it, or you know, like pick games or this year or for next year or something like that. So the ball is in their hands after these four, you know?
Well, we need to get our fans out there to get a hold of whoever they need to and say, we need BMO in town more to do these games, right?
Yeah, we need to get all those fans that we have and start, if you have a friend or in school or wherever, you know, that Hispanic, you know, heritage and stuff like that, just let them know, hey, man, they're showing the game, they're in Spanish and MLB and cardenales.com. So, you know, all those things, it'll help us out for sure.
Well, perfect. Well, we know that over the last time since we've done a show that the Cardinals have given us a lot to talk about. So I'm going to tee it up to you. You want to talk about yesterday's game? You want to talk about the end of the Colorado series? What do you feel like talking about?
You know what? The whole team, because we needed just to address every single aspect for the fans out there, I think. We can start anywhere you want, man.
Okay.
We can start with DeJohn. I mean,
okay,
how much interest are you with him?
Let's start with that. So we obviously we've had some roster moves over the last couple of days, right? So Grichuk goes down. They send him down to A-ball, so he's down in Jupiter, so he can work with the team down there, get a little bit of extra work, and I get that. But we bring up DeJohn, right? And
yeah, I think he was more like a mental break, you know, for Grichuk, you know, maybe just to get him out from very high competition games and just let him get his mindset. And usually those things work that for all the fans that are listening, man. They all work. The only thing that I didn't agree on was on when did they send him down, because we were facing Rich Hill. Have him face Rich, you know, and the ball's coming to you usually, and maybe we can have another righty in there. Sit down on Carp, you know, he's struggling, so that was an option. But I don't know, they have their own thinking, obviously, they have their own reasons for it, but it's just probably a mental break.
Well, let's hope so. I mean, for those of the people out there in Cardinal Nation that's listening to us right now, I guess the big point is what Yogi Berra said. You know, 90% of this game is half men, or whatever, or half of this game is 90%, whatever his quote is. There's a lot to that when you're in a slump and you're struggling, that effect, you know, takes, you know, it hurts every aspect of your game, whether it's the base running part, whether it's a defensive part. It's in your head, and I guess the best thing for him is to get him down into some of that weaker competition, some guys that he hasn't seen, get him down there and get him into an environment that, you know, he's used to in Jupiter, so maybe he can work out some of those kinks, because we know he can hit. I mean, obviously he can hit because he's made it this far, but how do we get him out of the slump, right?
Just remember this, when he was sent down, before that, he was struggling. I mean, he was having a really, really tough at-bats. The pitcher was having it too easy against him, things like that. And all of a sudden, they bring up this young kid, Sierra, and they bring up Pam, and they go off. I mean, those two kids went off right at the time when Grichuk was struggling. So talking about mental, man, if I'm struggling and I'm Grichuk, and I see these two kids that play my position, and they're coming off and tearing it up. I mean, how much more do you want for a mental break, man? I mean, that's crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, that could play into his mind that, damn, I got to do something about it, you know? So everything happened around him, like, right at the wrong time, is what I'm trying to say. Like, he got in the slum, and all of a sudden, these two kids came out and tore it up. And now he's putting a lot of pressure on himself. He's trying to do too much, and bam, he gets in a slump. And that's usually what happens when you try to do too much. I want people to understand this. Like, Fowler right now, he's struggling. But he's struggling because probably he's trying to do so much for the team. He's trying so hard that it's going against him. And it happens, you know, it happens. Once he gets settled down in St. Louis, once he gets settled, I bet you he'll be all right. But right now, he's just trying too hard. So that probably happened to Grichuk too, you know, after seeing those two. Oh, my goodness, I got a hit, you know?
Yeah, and that's exactly the point. That's, you know, what I was, you know, trying to bring up is that the pressure that these guys put on themselves or that they feel, and it could be as simple as, you know, what Jason Hayward went to last year. He signs a big offseason contract with the Cubs and gets up there, and he's expected to come in and be a major contributor to them. And just the pressure that they put on themselves is so ginormous and so overwhelming that it can put you into a slump.
Yeah, it's so much. I'm telling you, because when I signed with the Giants, and the pressure didn't hurt me. You know, like, to me, the pressure never hurt me on the Giants. I did great. I felt like I was doing awesome the whole time. The 3 years I was there, I was doing awesome. But it was a lot of pressure, man. And then all of a sudden, I'm hitting behind Barry Bonds. You know, I'm like, holy crap, you know, what do? I got to pick up. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have to do something because I'm hitting behind the freaking best hitter in the game, and I got to do something. So the pressure was double. Then he left, and I was the fourth batter in that team for 2 years. I'm like, holy crap, what do I do now? Right. And I'm usually an Angels. In the Angels, I was hitting eighth behind all those big guns guys. And all of a sudden goes to Toronto, I start hitting fifth, and then goes to Giants and, you know, and do all that. So people need to understand that there's a lot of pressure, not pressure to because you're afraid of teams and stuff like that, but the pressure that you want to help your team, the pressure that you want to hit homers, do you want to get RBIs and get those wins, you know?
Right. So that leads into that question. What did you feel more pressure as when you were hitting behind Bonds and you were being counted on that you had to pick up when pitchers were pitching around him? Or was it more pressure when he was gone and you were now the man that needed to fill those shoes? What was more pressure for you?
It was more pressure when I was hitting behind him because he was still there. And remember, who is Benji Molina, right?
Right.
And who is Barry Bonds? Who, if you're the manager, if you're the coach, if you're the pitching coach, if you're the pitcher, anybody that faces Barry Bonds, you're gonna face me. There's no doubt about that. And I'm not taking anything away from myself or whatever. I did okay, but that's just the bottom line. They're gonna pitch to me, so that was more pressure. The other years he wasn't there. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to be myself and blah, 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 and let's get going, you know?
Okay. And we talked about that when we talk about where, you know, Carpenter's hitting in the lineup or who's going to be our number four hitter, which, you know, from being a ball player, you know that there's an expectation level where you're batting in the order, okay? Whether it's leadoff and you need to take more pitches, whether it's hitting second and you need to be a guy who hits behind the runner, or you getting into the three or four spot where, hey, you're a big RBI guy. You know, there's a stigma, there's a reputation that goes on with where you're batting in the order that can ease some of that pressure or put more pressure on you. That's why when you move a guy like Colton Wong or some of these guys that you know, they struggle and they move them down into the seventh and eighth position, they do it because there's less pressure for them that they would put on themselves. And I don't know if a lot of people get that, and it sounds stupid, but it's just the fact of it's how baseball's played. You have the pressure to hit in certain situations, right?
Yes, that's exactly how it works. But at the same time, the manager and the GM and everybody that's in charge of the team, they need to find their best position for your guy. That's what they're messing up, I think. You have to find what does he do best? Like Colton Wong, what does he hit best? If he hits eight and he's hitting three something when he hits eight, and then he goes to a second spot and he hits one something, come on, man, that's an obvious choice. And if you had Yadi hitting third and he doesn't hit well, and he's hitting fifth and he hits like 400 or something, that's an easy choice. You know what I'm saying? Like, so you got to find the spot yourself. You got to watch the games. You got to find out in spring training. You got to talk to the guy, how you feel more comfortable. We had a problem here not too long ago when we had Carlos Beltran. Carlos he was awesome hitting second. And they keep putting him in fifth because Carlos was more comfortable hitting fifth. But he wasn't doing as well as when he hit second. So are you worried about the team or are you worried about the guy? That's also the little things that, you get paid for as a GM, as a manager. You have to go out and see what kind of position do I put this guy at. Like for example, Grichuk, you gotta put Grichuk mostly with lefties, mostly with guys that brings the ball to him so he doesn't have to alter his swing because that's what he does. He cannot hit like the ball, he has trouble hitting the ball away from the play a little bit or up and, you know, around away from the middle. So you have to put him in only on the guys that brings the ball to the plate, things like that. So you know that already. And different guys, I mean, we can go on and on against the whole team, and you can find that. You can do that. Guys like Fowler, he's a leadoff guy from the get-go, from minor leagues probably, so he's probably hitting comfortable. You got to find out about Cart. You got to find out about, you know, Jerko and whoever. But you got to put him in a position to succeed. You can't put the guy in a position to fail. Now, I'm sure Matheny's not trying to do that, but the guys play better in certain positions, like hitting, batting order and stuff like that. You know, they play better, so we, as managers and as coaches, we need to find out that. We need to find out what they're best at so we can put them in a good position to succeed, not to fail.
And that's my exact point. And for those, and I know we have a lot of fans out there that didn't play professional ball and didn't play college or whatever it might be. It sounds silly and it sounds goofy. But I'm telling you, there is something to where they bat in an order that will give them success or not have success. And the problem with our team right now, and Jimbo's alluded to it, is we're sitting there with a bunch of guys that are probably 5, 6, 7, and 8-hole hitters, and we don't have really a 2, 3, and 4 hitter, which is what we really need. And we are missing those guys.
Right. Yes, we're missing those guys, and I hope they know it. I hope they understand it. I hope they've seen it, because we have. At least I have. So I hope they do that. You know, I hope they can see it and, you know, they go after some guys later on, hopefully, and fill it up. Or we're just going to have a season just like that, up and down.
Right. Well, here's the deal. I'm a big fan of making moves at this time of year that we needed to. Obviously, we've gotten into a little bit of a slump, and we needed to get an additional spark, and we saw it a couple weeks ago when you brought Sierra up and Pham, and then the baseball moves, and we'll probably disagree on the moves. I know Jim and I probably do too, but they made a move and they brought up DeJean. And obviously they're a big fan of his. Just look at the number he's wearing. He's wearing Oquindo's number, right? He's wearing number 11. So he's a guy that they're looking to in the future. But where are you going to put him? Obviously, he can come up and he can spell a couple of days up here, or a couple of weeks, and give you a spark. And hopefully you can scratch out some wins and get back on the winning track. But how do you keep a guy like that up here, and where are you going to put him?
That's exactly the questions that it goes to the GM and it goes to the manager. They know it best, right? They know what they're doing best, because we can speculate. We can just say whatever we want. And it could help the team, but they have to make the decisions. And you got the perfect question. You know, it's like, where is he going to play? Because they love Wong, and he was doing good. Let's put it out there. He was doing great. He wasn't struggling or anything at that time. You know, he was doing okay. So the thing is, where is he going to play? And when Wong comes back, you need a spot. So he's the guy who's probably going to go down. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And that's my point. I mean, obviously, if you're going to look at the infield position, I don't think you're doing anything at first base yet, although I think that's a hole that we need to address sometime in the future. Second base, Wong, I think he's doing adequate. I would love to see him continue to improve, and I think you got to find out where he's eventually going to land in the order and then stick him there no matter what he's doing. If you put him in the 7 or 8 hole and he's hitting 400, leave him there. Don't move him up to the 2 hole. Don't move him into the 3 or the 5. Leave him where he's going to have that success and stop. Shortstop, obviously, Diaz has gone through some up and downs, okay? And yep. I know that Dejan plays short. It's what he's doing down there in Memphis. Third base is obviously, I think, Jerko's. He's making the plays. He doesn't necessarily have the range. He's not Manny Machado, folks. He's not Brooks Robinson. He's not a defensive stalwart. But he's making the plays over there, and he's still hitting. So I don't really think you're moving anybody out of third base. So I'm not seeing the room, and I don't think you bring Dejan up here and you put him on the bench. This guy is, and this is another thing we'll get to on the mental side, this guy is a starter, folks. He started baseball at age 4, most likely, and I'm guaranteeing he probably didn't sit the bench as a role player any time in his life. Okay? So that's why they use that AAA, because those guys go down there and they play every day. You can't send Peralta to AAA and keep Dejan up here as a bench player. You send Dejan to AAA to play, and you keep Peralta as your bench player to spell if there's a aches or pains or you need a day off. And I get it. One's better than the other. But these people that say, oh, you got to put your best 25 guys on the roster, and that's who you roll with, that's not how it works. Your best 25 guys are not going to be on the roster. Hopefully your best 9 start, or let's say your best 8 start, okay? But then there's position players. There's role players, okay? They have a role. Guess what? Tom Hanks doesn't have a B role in a C movie. Tom Hanks is the leading male character when he goes and does this, right? When he goes and does a movie. So it's the same thing.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. Yep. That's exactly right, what you just said. It just doesn't go 25 best guy. It just goes 9 best guy and the best bench role players. That's how it goes. The guys who comes off the bench, the guys who gets pinch hits, the guys who give the day off to somebody and he goes in for it. You know, things like that. That's why you fill up the team. You have to know that. As a fan, you have to understand that. Not the best 25. It never happens that way.
Absolutely. So that's my point. And you know, we hear it. We see it on Twitter. We hear it on the talk radio around town about this is what they need to do. And you're exactly right, you know, from the standpoint of, is Dejan better than Peralta at this point in their careers? Absolutely. But one's a role player for a role position, and one's a starter that you need to keep somewhere else to start. And until Dejan can replace Jerko or Diaz or Wong, he's got to go somewhere else and start every day and continue to get better.
Yeah, I think so. I'm with you. I think he needs to go down, and we already talked about Sierra, where he needs to go down and keep developing, and it's sad because he made it. A big difference on our lineup and our games. I don't know, man. He just came up and gave it that different flow. He almost looked like Tommy Pham and him took over like Vince Coleman and Willie McGee and all those guys. You know what I'm saying? Like they were going nuts, you know. And they looked actually the team looked like that because they were so fast. But those things have to happen. They have to go back and keep developing. And like you said, they got to wait for a spot, man, if there's no spot up here. And about Peralta, I think they have a chance to just trade him away. The other day, he had a chance, yesterday actually, he had a chance to start against Rich Hill. You have a veteran in the bench. Why not sitting down Carpenter, which is struggling, and he's a lefty. Why not sitting him down for a game and say, hey, listen, I'm going to have Peralta today just because Rich Hill's there and he already faced him. He might have a couple better at-bats. And, you know, why not? I don't see it. I don't see the reason why not sitting Carpenter in that game. I'm talking about that game yesterday. But, like now you put in Colorado, you put Grichik to face a right-hander throwing 99 with a great slider. Remember the last game?
Yeah, absolutely.
It was Marquez. He was throwing 99 gas and a great slider, but you put him in the lineup, of course he's going to struggle. So guess what? Now here comes Rich Hill, the lefty, that he might be able to handle a little better, and then he gets sent down. You know what I'm saying? Like, those little things like that tells you, like, come on, you know, like, come on, man. Like, you have to put the guys over to succeed, and that's my point, you know?
Yeah, and that is on Matheny, and that is on him putting the guys in a better position knowing what's going on. And I guess what? I don't have all the numbers in front of me as far as splits and this and that, and, you know, maybe Grichuk hits better in, you know, Colorado no matter who he faces. You know, whatever it might be, there's a million things that go into that. But from the surface, you're exactly right. When you're throwing a guy who's struggling, who can't catch the fat, he's tardy on everything hard. And then you know he's going to swing. He's going to expand the zone because he A.
And you know he's already on pressure.
Right, absolutely. A, he's either feeling the pressure, or B, you know, he just doesn't have a good concept of the strike zone right now. You know, so he's going to expand the zone. They did not put him in the optimal position where he needed to be successful. You're exactly right.
Yep, and it has happened before. It's not like this is the first time either. For fans out there that are listening, this is not the first time. This has happened before over and over. But they were thinking and they were hoping that he would succeed, right? That he would just come out of it and be Grichuk, you know, be what the guy that they want to be. At what point do you stop believing that? You know, at what point, if you're the GM or the manager, at what point do you stop believing that? And at what point you bring somebody else,
right,
like they did right now?
Well, let me tell you what's making it very hard is that the rest of the NL Central is sucking it up too, okay? And that 500 baseball
in our favor, right?
Right. Because we're still in it. So it would be a different story right now, Cardinal fans, if all of a sudden, if the Cubs were 15 games above 500 and we were sitting, you know, whatever it is, 15 games out, it would make it real easy to start making some changes and going to the younger guys because now you're going to get them experience. But when you're still in a pennant race, you know, 30 or 40% of the way through the season, okay, it makes it real tough to make those changes, A, because you're in it, B, because there's everybody else is in it, so nobody's willing to sell you any of their products. Nobody's decided that they're too far out of it yet. And that's going to get shaken up in the next, you know, month and a half when we hit All-Star break. You're going to find there's going to be guys that are going to take off, you know, whether it's Milwaukee playing, you know, playing better and getting to the All-Star break ahead of it, or the Cubs might catch fire, or hopefully it's the Cardinals. But things will work out the later you get in the season, and that will dictate what Mo is going to be able to do. And granted, I would love to be able to trade Matt Adams for Manny Machado, but that wasn't going to happen. You're not going to trade Peralta for Manny Machado.
Or you need help in the bullpen right now. Why not trade that kid, that Adams, which I didn't like the trade because I love Matt Adams, but why not trading him for somebody in the bullpen that's going to help you out, you know? If that's what I saw kind of like, you know, I didn't know what to think about that because we need help in the bullpen. It's no secret. No secret. And I told it, and I said it before. I said, you know what? We can play all the games we want. We can be as hot as we can. But if you don't have the bullpen, it's not going to do it. It's not going to happen.
Right. And we talked about this, and we'll move into the bullpen next because obviously that's I know people think that O's having a fine season or Rosenthal's having a fine season, and they're doing okay. But I think that they have that in them to be that much better to where our eighth and ninth inning are secure. So there's two rules of thumb here. You can either go get a top-end closer so the pressure's not on O's and O and Rosenthal to be shut down guys. They move them to the seventh and eighth inning guys. Or do you go and get another middle reliever who's probably going to be a lot cheaper that can come in and be your holds guy? Because we are absolutely getting killed in the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. I think the stat came up on the game yesterday where we've given up the most runs, and it was 93 at the time. And I'm doing all this without a computer, so how about that, BMO?
Hey, that is a lot of brain right
I
there,
know.
Man.
93 runs that we've given up in the seventh, eighth, or ninth inning. And that is absolutely what's going to kill our team. Okay? So where do you go? Do you want to top-end closer, which is going to cost you a lot of talent, or do you want another holds guy in there? And to me, I love our young talent, but you're going to have to decide where you're making the run. Okay? And okay, go ahead.
Exactly. No, I'm saying exactly right, man. You have to make a decision. Do I want a top-notch closer, or I can deal with that with these two guys, Rosenthal and O, and they're doing okay, but I need another help. I need somebody that comes in and holds and shuts them down. You know what I'm saying? Like, not just maybe. I need somebody to just come in, shut them down. That's it. You know, I mean, the lights out guy, the name guy, somebody that makes some fears out there, you know? So the guys that we have right now, they're good pitchers. They're trying to battle. I give them that, and they're trying so hard. And again, let's go back to the pressure. They know their bullpen struggling. Those kids out there, the pitching and the bullpen, they all know that. So they put extra pressure on themselves when the guys at first and they bring Broxton in or Cecil, when they bring him in to get lefties out, they put pressure on themselves because they know they're struggling. You know what I'm saying? So that's how they pitch. And it might work against them. It's the truth. And that happens a lot.
Right.
So, but if you need to fix up the bullpen, I would think, obviously, if you can get a top-notch closer, I mean, that would be great. That's fine. But I would do... I keep these two guys at the end, but I'll bring one more shutdown guy, you know, with name and stuff. Here, this is your spot, and okay, let's go move forward now.
So that's, and we're getting into a lot of baseball mental side of things, but I want you to touch on one other thing, especially with your experience from the catching standpoint. And there's difference between strikeout guys, swing and miss guys, and there's difference between pitch to contact. And what I'm seeing out of our bullpen are these guys that are trying to get guys to chase balls off the plate as opposed to pitching to, you know, contact. You know, and that's what's frustrating to me is that we're seeing a lot of walks, and then we're getting in a bad pitcher's count where all of a sudden, I mean, we saw it yesterday on Bellinger had a 3-0 count, and Leak had to bring one into him. I mean, that's a hitter's count, right? And all of a sudden, you throw a 94 across the middle of the plate. These young kids might not miss that ball. So what is the difference between pitching a contact and trying to be like Rosenthal, where I see him really kind of, you know, dial it up into 100, 101 and striking guys out?
The difference is that the guys that are to contact don't have the speed that the other guys have. That's all it is. Rosenthal throw up upper 90s, man. It's almost 100, 98, 99 all the time, the whole inning. Plus, he have good breaking stuff, you know, like change up and stuff. So that's the difference. That's a strikeout guy because it's really hard to hit that 98 to 100 fastball. But you have Leak that throws 89, 90, 91 miles an hour. You know, he's a contact guy. The difference is he has to move the ball more. He has to sink it. He has to cut it. And you guys are seeing that. He's pitching great, man. He's pitching awesome. He's throwing that ball, cutting into lefties. He's throwing that sinker away. He's throwing that ball that dive, you know, the sinker that dive right on the plate, and guys are swinging right, beating it to the ground. I mean, he's doing an unbelievable job, and that's the difference. Like, the slower guys have to move the ball around the plate. They have to move it. They have to move it. We call it east and west. And north and south. We have to move it. That's just the difference. What the power guy does, it's like, here it is, guy. You want to hit it? Here it is. Because I have the power. I have that fastball, that 98, 99, and it's really hard to catch up. You know, that's the main difference.
Well, it's just frustrating from, you know, when I turn it on to the fans' perspective, and I, you know, I'm watching Rosenthal get out there in the eighth inning, and, you know, his first pitch is ball one. I mean, it seems like it's 75% of the time that you very rarely get into a pitcher's count where this guy is getting ahead of the guy and then, you know, and then trying to carve him up. It seems to me like there's something missing, either movement on his ball or he just doesn't think he can get it by, even hitting 99 and 100, that these guys are just sitting there and saying, well, I'm going to make sure you bring it over to plate. I'm not going to expand the zone. I would love to see what he did, you know, what was it, 3 or 4 years ago, where he just went out there and it was, hey, here's 99 or 100. If you can catch it, more power to you, but I'm going to fill up the strike zone. I feel like he's starting to nibble too much.
Yeah, but it comes down to what we're saying, and you might see this out of a lot of more pitchers in the end because they don't want to give it up. They want to do it so hard for the team. They want to win so hard. They know that they're struggling behind in the bullpen, so they try so hard. You know what I'm saying? Like, they put the pressure so much in themselves that now, like you said, he's not freely throwing strikes so much because, okay, I don't want to leave it right down the middle because we need this game and I need to paint the corner. Okay, ball one. You know what I'm saying? So in their head, they're probably thinking, man, I don't want to be the guy giving it up or something. I want to save this game so bad. So they start picking the corners and things like that. But it happens, you know. But I'd rather take a guy that's powerful than him, and he has the breaking stuff too. I mean, he has good breakers and he has some good changeups. He'll be fine. He doesn't worry me. I don't as much as the other part of the bullpen, you know.
Well, we definitely need some help there because, you know, we talked about it, you know, for the first 2 months of the season now, where all of a sudden we looked at each other a couple weeks ago and said, hey, I'll take Wainwright as our number five. You know, we thought he was going to be, you know, middle of the rotation guy. But, you know, if the other four guys are pitching well and Waino's your fifth, I'll take that. Well, all of a sudden, Waino, last couple of starts, has gone out there and he looks like a top-end rotation guy. And you keep blowing these games in the seventh, eighth, or ninth. Or the more frustrating thing, I guess, is when you get up early and you don't continue to put the offensive pressure on these other guys, and all of a sudden you keep, and I get into the mental part of baseball probably way too much, but if you're not continuously scoring runs, that puts a lot of pressure on that pitcher to go out there. If you go, you score two runs in the first, two runs in the second, and then all of a sudden the third and fourth, you go three up and three down, that puts pressure on that Wainwright or Leak or whoever it is to go out there and try to be even that much more pinpoint accurate, because they don't have confidence in the back end of the bullpen either.
Exactly. The pressure is on, always. They know they haven't been able to hit so well, score many runs. They know they haven't been able to pitch in the bullpen so well. So the pressure keeps growing, like you just said. Wainwright, I mean, the way he's pitching, we should win the games, you know? And then all of a sudden we score a couple. It's easier said than done. I mean, let's face it. We're just talking options and all that stuff. We're not saying that they should do it because it's really easier to talk about. But, yeah, if you could just add on some more runs to put some you know, cushion on the lead or something. But, anyway, we have to keep playing the game. We have to keep playing nine innings. We cannot give up any innings. The way that this team is made right now, the way they're playing right now overall, we have to play nine full innings as hard as we can, 100% for nine full innings. We cannot find ourselves giving away innings or, you know, nothing like that. We have to fight for those nine innings the way we're going right now, you know?
Right, and we talked about that, Jim and I did, when we coached the little kids, we talked about winning innings. And I know La Russa used to talk about winning series. Hey, let's take two out of three every time we face another team. We're going to win this series. We're going to take two out of three. And you're going to look up and you're going to be, you know, 20 games over 500 at the end of the season. We need to probably, and I don't know if they do this, but they need to start breaking it down even simpler terms for these guys, because they need to stay focused on the fundamentals of the game, and they need to start talking about winning innings, winning this at bat, winning this defensive inning. And I think they just kind of look at it maybe as a big picture, as a nine-inning game, and if they would break it down and say, okay, we're going to go out there and win this inning, maybe it'll help them out a little bit more.
I think that was our philosophy when I was here in 2013 with John Mabry, which he doesn't get the credit he deserves. He's a very smart guy on the hitting side, very, very smart, and I really, really admire his job. I think he's really one of the top hitting coaches, but that was our philosophy right there, just what you just said. What ours was, win this pitch. That's very simple. Win this pitch. That's what our philosophy was. And actually, that narrows it down to, let's play this game one pitch at a time. That's what it is. It's not easy, but that's the way we got to see it. Let's win this pitch and try to. I mean, we're facing good teams, and I told you guys next 2 weeks. Even though in the big leagues there's no bad teams, obviously, but there's a little difference from the top teams to the bottom teams. There's a little difference. That's what I meant, but. I mean, the Dodgers, they ain't no joke, man. They ain't no joke. They have names, and they have the rookies. We were talking this on the radio, and we were saying the same thing. They have the rookies, but the rookies have come up and done something, like play well. They played well. They're not just getting ready to, a couple of years, be the best or something like that. No. They're bringing them up, and they're really good freaking players, man, even when they're rookies. You know what I'm saying? They have names, but they go out and they perform. They perform, and that's what we need, guys, that if you're going to come up, okay, you come up, but you got to perform. You can't have potential. You cannot potentially hit 30 homers. No, there's no potential in the major leagues. That's potentially goes to instructionally. I don't like that word because of that. I like guys that come in and do the job. And do what they're asked, and they just start hitting from the get-go. Maybe not, you know, huge, you know, like numbers, but damn, dude, you know, like what your name is for. You know, let's go up, let's bring Bellinger up. Bellinger is doing something.
Absolutely.
Or Corey Seager, he's a rookie, man. This is his second year, and look at what type of player he is. You know what I'm saying? That's what I think. I mean, we're facing some tough, tough teams, man. It's like the same with Boston when those guys, I mean, they come out and they perform. They don't – you don't joke around with those guys. In Boston, you bring a guy up, you better perform. If not, we'll find somebody. And that's just the way they do it, you know?
Right. And I want to get into that when – it's probably going to be the last thing I want to talk about because I want to get your opinion on that, like the – The metrics and the measurements that they have now with hitting, and we'll touch on that here in a minute. But I have some interesting takes on that compared to old school baseball and new school baseball and how they're teaching these guys. But what I want to get into, I love your philosophy about every pitch. We want to win every pitch. And what that simply does is that's simply going to break it down into the fundamentals of this baseball game. And folks, I know a lot of you might think, or your friends that don't listen to the show might think, that baseball is a boring, boring sport. But there is things to work on every pitch, no matter where you play, where you can measure whether you won or lost that pitch. And let me simply say, there are times in a ball game where you become not focused on that every pitch, and you might give an at-bat away, you might give a defensive play away, you might give a base-running blunder away, a pitch away. There are things that every position player can do on every single pitch to win or lose that pitch, whether or, you know, a good guy's up to hit. And it's a 3-0 count, and I'll simply give you one. And I know I'm taken, right? I'm not Bellinger. I'm not going to hit a 3-0 pitch out of the ballpark. But when I'm taking that pitch, I'm going to get into a good hitting position so I'm prepared for that 3-1 ball as opposed to the 3-0 ball. That's winning a pitch.
Exactly. That is what it is. That's exactly what it is.
So this brings me to the other fundamentals. okay? Jose Martinez, when those base hits are going out to you and you're throwing through, okay, and not hitting your cutoff man, you lost that pitch. That was a bad baseball play. And the fundamentals are killing
me. Horrible.
Horrible.
That was horrible. Simple. You know, and he knows it. He knows it. And I bet you next time he's going to hit the cutoff.
Well, the fact of the matter is he did it twice in a row. And, you know, Puig was on second. There's a fly ball out to him. And he throws over Diaz's head. He's offline. And then, what was it, two innings later, you get a base hit out there. And he does the same thing. He comes up. He's not playing fundamental baseball. And that is losing that pitch.
Yep. And then the fly ball to tag up play. No, that was a base hit. You're right. The one that Utley hit, which you have Puig coming up next, which he leads the league in double plays. Okay?
Absolutely.
That's exactly when you anticipate as a player and you say, okay, if I get the ball here to my left, I'm going to be careful enough to at least keep a double play in order. And those guys, they show you right there that they're probably just get caught up with the moment of the pitch instead of anticipating. Remember what we talk about, the anticipation word?
Absolutely.
Was one of the biggest words that I ever learned in baseball. And if you're a fan out there, if you have a kid, if you have all kinds of stuff going on, and you have a kid that plays and all that stuff, hey, anticipation is one of the biggest words you ever hear.
So to go on, I got a story for you. It's the first year Jim and I put our select team together. It was after their Little League season. We're going to get in an end-of-the-year baseball tournament. And they were 7 years old. It was still pitching machine. And we used to have he came on the show with us, a friend of mine I grew up with and played high school ball with, Mark Little, who played in the major leagues for several years. His kid was on the team with us. And one of the dads and Mark were out in the outfield working with the outfielders. And the whole – with Little League baseball and pitching machine at 7U, it's just once the ball gets into the pitcher's arms, hands, the play's over with, right? So go ahead.
When it
gets to the pitching mound.
Yeah, that's what we have, yeah.
So the dad that's working with Mark Little out there, you know, Mark's showing him, hey, guys, I want you to catch the ball. He's trying to teach him how to catch it. You're 7 years old, and I just want you to throw it into the second baseman so we can throw it into the pitcher. And the other dad said, hey, Mark, don't you think we should teach the kids all the plays? And Mark says, no, I think we need to stick with this. He goes, well, I think we need to teach all three plays to them. And he goes, Mark corrected him. He said, there's actually like 148 different outfield plays that you can learn. So, and that's one of the things, the anticipation. My dad taught it to me from an early age. It made me cry probably every time we took infield. It made me cry after the game. What are you going to do with the ball if it's hit to you? What am I going to do if that ball's hit to me? And you got to know if Puig's up and he's going to hit into a double play possibly. And you got to know that if you got a three-run lead that you don't care about that guy at third. You want to keep the guy off a second.
But this goes to every aspect of the game. We're talking about defense. We're talking about hitting. Like when I was in the on-deck circle, I already had in my head that if this guy gets on, he's a speedy guy. He might either try to steal or he might either give me a hit and run. Or even if the game is down by one and we're trying to tight it, I mean, I'm thinking all these things in the on-deck circle, man. And if I'm in the hole, in the dugout, and I'm third, I'm thinking if these two guys get on, where am I going to bunt?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it goes to hitting, it goes to fielding, it goes to running the bases, man, which we had two bone plays again, or three yesterday, that could have changed the game. It could have changed the game. Those two base runners' mistake. I mean, we don't know because obviously we still got a hit.
Right.
Two things, but at least it would have put us in a good position to succeed, like we said. So,
hey, but on that note,
it's crazy. It's the main word.
Absolutely. On that note, I did not mind Dijon getting thrown out at home. Okay? I thought it was an overly aggressive play, but he was listening to his coach and not making a decision on his own, unlike Tommy Pham a couple nights before, who a ball hit to right field that almost hit him on a hit and run. I think Yachty hit the ball, right? Drives the ball to right field. Tommy Pham on a ball to right field is rounding second base looking for the ball. And, folks, you might not think it causes anything, but I guarantee it cost him three steps because he's turned completely around backwards.
Look at your coach.
Pick up the coach. That's fundamentals that is absolutely killing this team. And I get it. That mistake, who knows what happens with it. But if Tommy Pham scores there, does the inning change? If there's all sorts of things. And what are you going to do? Are you going to get to September 30th, October 1st, and say, boy, if we would have just won one of those games, had we not had this runner thrown out for a mental mistake? Had we not given
And what happened last year? We didn't go to the playoff for what? For one game.
One game.
That's it, one game. And especially if you don't have a good game in April, it might come back and hunt you. That's just how baseball goes.
Well, my challenge for all of our listeners.
The anticipation word is huge on everything. If you're a base runner at first and you don't anticipate the block ball in the dirt and you just stay there like a moron, because I'm sorry to use that word, but I don't like using that word, but if you stay there like a dumb butt and then you see that you don't anticipate the ball in the dirt, and that ball goes in the dirt, and you're like, oh, shoot, I should go, oh, shoot. And then you stay at first. You're not doing anything good to the freaking team, man. You're not doing anything good. What the hell are you doing there for? Because you're supposed to be there and give your heart out for 3 hours or more.
Talk about that. And we talked about it from the time that these kids were in coach or in regular kid pitch on up, is even when you're on the bases, you have got to look at the trajectory of that ball coming out of the pitcher's hands. Okay? You've got to look for if it's a curveball, because you know that some of these guys have a tendency to throw the ball in the dirt. And that's when you get a little bit more aggressive, watching it out of the hand. Because if you're aggressive out of the hand on a trajectory of a pitch, you're not going to get picked off. If you're going to be aggressive when a guy's throwing a ball right down the middle, guess what? Yachty's going to throw behind you and get you, probably.
Yeah, and then the thing is that it is really hard for a catcher to get up, get the ball, and throw. It is really, really hard. That's why I always told my guys when I was coaching first, see the ball in the dirt, pick it as quick as you can, and go. Even if you get thrown out, at least you're being aggressive. You're not standing there just the whole at bat. Just be aggressive, and I bet you 9 or 10, you're going to make it, because it's hard for the catcher to move around, get up, move around, and throw the ball. That's just how it is. It's very difficult.
Right. Well, I challenge our listeners, and I know we're up against our hour here, and it kind of flew by. I didn't even know how I was going to do with taking over this ship solo here. But we made it through
an
hour.
We did good, man.
I think we did real great.
We did good.
I'm going to challenge our listeners.
Hey, we haven't talked about the brawl, man. What the heck? People want to hear about the brawl.
Yeah, they do.
I'll take you. I'll give you my take real quick.
All right, go ahead.
I know we have to go. Hey, that brawl, it was very simple. The guy, they have a history, for people that don't know. They have a history. 2 years ago, the guy hit two homers. They stare at each other. I mean, come on. That was coming. If I'm a pitcher, I'm a freaking man. I'm not a freaking kid. I'm not somebody that you're going to come up and look at me like I'm a idiot. No, heck no. Oh, you're going to look at me after you hit a homer off me? Oh, you're going to do that? Oh, okay, all right, no problem. We all start out. You got me twice, I'm going to get you once. And guess what? You got a chance. Like I said always, a hitter that gets hit, he has a clear lane to the pitcher. Don't take it on the infielder. Don't go to first bitching about it or saying some things. No, you have a clear lane to go get him. And that's what Harper said. I go get him. You know, I was right there, and I'll go get him. So what I have an issue with is the catcher, Posey, staying behind the play, not going in. I don't care what reason he has. I can care less what the reason is. I love Buster. He's my friend. He's a good guy, Christian guy, and I love him to death. But there's no way in the world your catcher stays like that on the plate. He was going to hear it from me if I'm in that team. You know what I'm saying? That's one thing I would never, ever, ever suggest a catcher to do. I don't care what you have gone through. And the Bumgarner deal that he went into the clubhouse, the simple reason is you're not supposed to be on the field when you're on the DL. That's why they told him, if something's going to happen, go inside. Do not go in because you will get suspended. That's the simple reason why he went in. I bet you anything he wanted to go outside, but he couldn't go because of the DL. I've been there before. But Buster being there in the front row and not doing anything for his team, I can take that. I'm sorry. Me and Yadi were talking and we're like, oh man, I would never do that ever. You know how much you lose respect from your teammates. You lose respect from your fans. Even though I don't know if that's going to happen, but at least for my fans, when I played, and at least for my teammates, he would lose respect for sure. You know, and he would hear it from a lot of guys. I bet you Troy Percival would eat him up in the clubhouse. I bet you Mo Vaughn will eat him up. I bet you Darren Erstad would eat him up. That's for sure. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's interesting.
I bet you all those crazy guys.
So I'll give you my take, and I'm glad you brought this up. Hey, and I don't have to go at an hour, okay? The wife's away in Mexico, all right? She's having a good time with a girlfriend over there, so she doesn't come home for another day. I could stay on the show for hours. You know how I love talking baseball with you, BMO. So here's the deal. I'll just set it up. So Hunter Strickland from the Giants gives up a couple of bombs to Bryce Harper a couple years ago. Baseball players are notorious for long memories. Harper gets up facing Strickland. There's really nothing on the line. Strickland beans him right in the hip, which to me is a purpose pitch, a great bean ball. I mean, you're going to go, I want it above the knee, and I want it, you know, as high as maybe the numbers in the middle of the back. And that's it. You don't head hunt, and you don't go low on these guys. So obviously it was a purpose pitch. Now the funny thing is Strickland's a big boy. I wonder if he told, and I'm not sure, I haven't followed up too much. I wonder if he told Posey, hey, if he comes, I want him to come on out. I want to teach this kid a lesson. So it would be interesting to find out if he gave him a little bit extra, because I would find it hard to believe that obviously you knew it right out of the hand. If you're Buster Posey and you see that ball 3 feet off the plate at a guy's hip, you know it's a purpose pitch. Why he didn't jump up and get in front of him, to me, almost lends itself to, hey, this Strickland wanted to give him a fist at two, you know?
Yeah, don't get me wrong. The let him go and fight and, you know, like get him, it's okay. He can let him go. I have no problem with that. But you got to go right behind him. Because if he gets your pitcher, you're right behind him. You can hold him. You can do something.
Right.
And at the same time, you don't look like bad, because that's what he looked like.
He looks real
horrible,
bad.
He was really horrible looking and just standing in the freaking home plate. I understand, let him go, but go right behind him, man. Go right behind him just in case something happened. You're ready right there, right behind your guy. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I got pitchers told me before, let him go, BMO. If he comes up, I want him to come up. I had that, but I was right behind the guy. You know what I'm saying?
That's very interesting stuff, man. And I'm a big
– play he enough, man. I'm so I don't know how to say it, man. I'm so disappointed at him, and because I love the guy, and I thought he was, like, all out for the team. And, you know, I thought he was, you know what I'm saying, like the man, and all of a sudden you see this, and you're like, oh, crap, man, what are you doing, man?
Well, I tell you what, if Strickland didn't tell him, let him come, then they're going to have some clubhouse issues out there, because that's a bad move.
Even if he did tell them, I'm telling you, you should just say, listen, let him go, no problem, yes. But go right behind him. Don't look like an idiot out there or somebody like didn't want no part, man. Don't do that, you know?
Well, you bring up this whole conversation lends itself to something else that just popped into my head. And I'm more of an old school baseball player. I like the old school stuff. Do I like trucking a catcher for no reason? No. But I like contact. But what pops into my head is the kid from Washington, the third baseman Rondon. He turns an unbelievable double play the other day, a 5-4-3 double play, that because of the slide rule at second base, this second baseman's able to sit there in a comfort zone and take a good throw from Rondon. I mean, it's a hell of a defensive play and it's a great throw, and turn a double play without having to get blown up there at second base, somebody coming in hard. And to me, that hurts my feelings on how the game of baseball used to be played. It used to be to protect yourself.
It's very simple put. That's not baseball.
Those guys are at no risk anymore of getting taken out at second base.
How well can you put it? How well can you say it? How well can you say these things? That's not baseball. That's how I see it.
Exactly. The last thing I want to see is somebody get hurt. Okay? I want to see my best players out on the field, but I don't want it because we've protected them, and now all of a sudden a skill set is now gone from the game. Because all I have to do is to be able to throw the ball 94 miles an hour from second to first, and I can turn a great double play. Whereas before, I had to be quick with my hands and quick with my feet.
Without fear. Come on.
Exactly.
Come on. No chance. No way. I'm telling you, no way. That's not baseball. Not at all. At least not for me. That's my opinion. With the catchers, I can understand that if the guy is offline and you hit him, that's bull crap. But like if the guy's blocking the play, let's get hit. Let's do it. Because I'm blocking you. But if the guy's not blocking the play, don't come out and try to hurt me. I get that. But don't come up to me and try to hurt me when I'm off line or something, you know?
Right. There's good hard baseball and there's dirty baseball, okay? And the good hard baseball is, hey, if I'm going to throw at you, I'm going to keep it above the knees, I'm going to keep it below the shoulders, all right? The good hard baseball is, I'm going into second hard.
Yeah, you played infield.
Yeah.
You know that if the guy comes in hard on the bag and breaks a double play, without passing the bag, you know, like a hard, clean double play, break it, and then you can reach the ball to the side. I mean, you can reach the bag from your hand to the sides. That's awesome. That's baseball. But if you go slide high or slide past the bag, I mean, that's dirty. It's very clear. So you get the guy out. You throw him out or whatever. But don't kill the game, man.
Right.
Don't kill our game.
It reminds me of maybe we should just have a ghost runner on first, okay? And everything's done by the stopwatch. Hey, if you can throw it to second and then throw it to first by the time you get the runner on first, hey, it's a double play. I need to see somebody going in trying to break up a double play. That is part of the baseball game. That's what makes it magical, is those guys like Ozzie Smith coming across the bag, flying through the air to turn a double play. That's what makes it special.
Teach him how to get the heck out of the way. Teach him. Take your time to teach the guy how to get the heck out of the way. You know what I'm saying? Teach him. Take your time. Take him to instructional league and say, okay, buddy, let's go work out here. Let's do this. You're going to have guys coming in hard at you. We need to get you out of there. Work with them, not just put a catcher at second base. Don't just put a left fielder at second base. Don't do that, because it's actually hurting the game.
Absolutely, know? and that's the sad part of it. But I'm going to challenge all of our listeners out there that when you're watching a Cardinal game tonight and you're listening to the Spanish television broadcast, okay, and you can't understand a word that Polo and Benji are saying, okay, I want you to anticipate every pitch. Okay? Think about what the pitcher is going to throw in a certain count. Think about what the runner should be doing, what the outfielder should be doing, whether they should bunt, hit and run, steal a bag. Because there is a lot more to the baseball game than just hitting and fielding and throwing. There's a lot more to baseball than those three things. And if you want to truly, truly enjoy the game and the mental aspect that we've touched on today, get involved in every pitch thinking what it's going to be, what the offense should be doing, what the defense should be doing, and I guarantee you'll enjoy the game a lot more.
Yeah, enjoy the game by thinking, okay, what is he doing here? Why is he doing this? Why is he throwing the first? Why is he trying to keep him close? Why is it matters that he doesn't get to second or to third? Or why does it matter that he doesn't break the double play? You know, things like that.
Well, my friend, I loved it. I don't know if we even need Jim anymore.
Don't tell him that, man.
I know. You know who we do need back? We need back Fish. We need Jim. We need you in the studio. We need a good we need Carly in here one day. We need to have a meeting of the minds again and do a show like that.
Heck yeah, man. Heck yeah.
Well, my friend, you got Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday games, and I'm sure you'll be letting me know when you're available. We'll get together, right?
Yeah, of course, man. Of course. I'll let you know for sure. Tomorrow's game is at night, so we might go to La Tejana with our friends from La Quebuena, man. We might go there, so we might see you there.
Absolutely.
We'll talk about it.
You let me know, and I will be there. We've been trying to get there because I need to talk to Kyle about the old Dallas Cowboy podcast, my other one that I do. And we're still planning our October 8th trip, pending the Cardinals in the playoff situation. But October 8th, Packers at Cowboys. That's going to be a big rivalry game for us.
Oh, man, it's going to be so easy game. But anyway, we'll make it happen. We'll make it a game.
Well, I'm gonna,
we'll win tight.
I'm going to bet you an order of toasted raviolis from Emo's if you know, on that game. I got the Cowboys winning that one.
I'll get you that one. No worries.
Okay, BMO. You let me know, and that's it for our show. Happy to bring it to you. I'm glad I made it through the hour and 15 minutes with Jim in the beginning, and then me and Benji took it home there for the rest of the show. I think it was a great show. We'll see what the numbers do, but I appreciate everybody out there. Remember, if you want to find us, twobirdsonabat.com. You can find us at Twitter at Birds on a Bat Show. Facebook, search just Two Birds on a Bat. For all the folks here at Lineup Media, and Benji, I did have that written down. I didn't do it off the top of my head. Jim wrote it down for me.
That was awesome. That was awesome, though.
For all the crew here at Lineup Media, appreciate you guys listening to us, and make sure you interact with us and let Jim know how we did on the show. That's it for our
man.
Show. And
go
Birds.
Man.
Yeah.
Go Birds.
Go Birds.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.